Hello, today is Thursday, June 4th, 2009, and you are listening to the Colcast, brought to you by NEPACrossroads.com. Today we're a little changed up. My name is Paul Volko. I'm going to be your host for today. Normally we have Patrick Connolly from AHS with us as well, but he had to bow out for the night. But that's okay, because we have a guest with us tonight, first guest for the show, and please welcome Mike. He is a coal miner from down Pennsylvania way. How are you doing tonight, Mike?
Oh, pretty good.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. Where do you work? What do you do?
Well, my main job, I work at Jeddo Coal Company. I'm a maintenance electrician there, and they're located in Jeddo, Pennsylvania. I also work at the Alfred Brown Coal Company, 7 foot slope in New Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, as a laborer and electrician underground. And I'm the mine manager of the number 9 mine and number 9 tourist mine in Lansford, PA.
Cool. How long have you been at it?
About 5 years.
And what, you're about, what, 23, 26?
25.
25, okay. Right in the middle. All right. Cool. Is this a family thing for you, or did you get into it yourself, or what?
Yeah, my family has been involved in the anthracite mining industry pretty much for almost as long as there has been an anthracite mining industry.
Well, it's good to get a little bit of background on you. Our topic for tonight, of course, is going to be the new mining regulations that are coming up. If you've been following on the NEPA Crossroads forums, you may have caught a couple of threads over the last 2 or 3 months now, talking about the new MSHA regulations, as well as a federal law that was signed in 2006 called the Miner Act. This is all going to be coming into effect here in the middle of this month, and we have Mike here to kind of walk us through it a little bit, answer some questions, and hopefully find out what kind of impact, if any, this is going to have on the industry and also consumers of anthracite coal. So I guess we'll just start off. Is the problem that this is going to be the Miner Act is the problem that's coming down the pike here? Is that correct?
That's the problem for this year. It seems like the past couple of years, every year there's been a big issue that's been forced upon the anthracite deep mining industry in general, and to a lesser extent the strip mining industry. But the Miner Act is phased in different phases, and this new requirement, the last phase to come in, the underground tracking communications requirement, is going to be the biggest of the issues that they phase in, that cause some problems here in the anthracite.
All right, and you said there's two parts to it. There's the tracking. So if there's any kind of collapse or other emergency, they want to be able to track the location of everybody that's in the mine. And then there's also the communications during an event like that, right?
Correct. Yes. They want two-way communications between the miner and on the surface. What we, in an event of a collapse, what we have is, now, we're required to have two means of communication underground. Your FEMCO telephones, just basically like a telephone, and a horn that you can just bring out the different signals that's posted at the foot of the slope to raise the lower man. But they're wired communications. Now, the Miner Act requires wireless communications with the surface.
And why are they wanting to go wireless? Is it just a matter of the line possibly getting cut during a collapse and they want to avoid that problem?
Correct. That's what they want. But as of today, right now, there is no true wireless system that will work in the anthracite due to the different the terrain that we have that we encounter, which is completely different from what they encounter in your typical bituminous mine.
How's it different?
In your average bituminous mine, or your soft coal mine, the terrain, the vein of coal lays flat, perfectly flat or pretty darn close to it. Here in the anthracite, most of your veins lay 60, 70, 80, 90 degree pitch, and they roll, they twist, they don't run true. Like your bituminous veins, usually they're flat and they run pretty straight and narrow. Our vans don't. I mean, they're pitched heavy to begin with, and there's twists, rolls, faults, all that. And there is no wireless communication that will transmit through the rock and around corners. All the wireless communication that they have now, you need line of sight, which you don't have in an anthracite mine.
Okay, so this isn't just a matter of, you know, the anthracite mining industry being smaller, not being able to take on the cost of a similar system. For an anthracite mine to comply, they're going to have to spend more than a similar size bituminous mine?
By far. Just because if, I'm just going to throw this number out there. Let's say in an average bituminous mine, you're going to need 20 nodes or antennas underground for the system to work. In an anthracite mine, you might need 50, 60, 70 antennas to make this work just because of the number of turns, corners, all that you encounter in our mines.
Okay. Well, that clears up one question I had. Wasn't entirely clear. I thought a lot of the upset that had been voiced on the forums had been more about just the anthracite mining and underground anthracite mining industry being too small to really support buying a similar system. And you've just made clear that they actually have to spend quite a bit more than a similar sized bituminous mine. Okay. So you're saying that the wireless systems don't exist, or if they do exist, you have to spend a lot of money because there's a lot more nodes and antennas and everything needed for it. What about the tracking side of it? Is it a similar situation there?
Correct. Yep. They're basically one and the same. What they want is, to give you an idea, basically what they want is something similar to a pager that you can put on your helmet or on your waist or something. And every time you walk past a node, it'll record your location and the time that you walk past that on the surface. And also, in the event of an accident, it's supposed to allow text messaging or voice communications between you and the surface. And it's not going to work here. Just not going to work.
For all the same reasons as the wireless communications one, it's just a matter of the technology not being able to handle the terrain.
That's correct. And there is another issue, too, that really hasn't been touched on much. Most of our anthracite deep mines, there's very, very little to no electricity underground. If there is any electricity underground, it's just for pumps. Now, what the federal government's requiring you to do via the Miner Act is take your more communications cables underground, your leaky feeders if you're going to go that route, or your antennas for your nodes, or the cable for the nodes underground and close to the surface. Now you have a source of RF energy close to the face. And that in itself isn't a problem. But what the problem is, in the anthracite, we still use explosives underground on a daily basis. As a matter of fact, that's the only way to mine anthracite coal on the pitches with explosives. Now, in every box of detonator caps, there's a warning label. It says specifically, do not use around any sorts of RF energy. Now, if we're required to have these nodes relatively close to the face, you're going against the warning of that manufacturer that says, do not use these caps around any source of RF energy. And in essence, what they're doing is they're requiring, the best analogy I can give you is, the federal government is now requiring every miner to take a pack of cigarettes in the mine and smoke it at the face. Now, they're not doing that, you know, in reality, but that's basically what they're doing. I mean, in these mines now, there's no way to set explosives off accidentally, really. And with these leaky feeder systems and the different systems that they have out there, it is a distinct possibility.
And of course, it's not like they're going to give you an exemption to be able to turn off the system when you're blasting, because when you're blasting, it's probably one of the prime opportunities for some kind of collapse to happen, correct?
That's correct.
Interesting catch-22 there that the government came up with. Is this all born from the fact that the people and the groups that were involved with creating the Miner Act, they're all from the bituminous community and there wasn't any input from the anthracite side? Or, I mean, is it just a simple oversight, or do you think there's some more nefarious means behind it?
I'm going to say, to be fair to them, I think it was oversight on their part. Because I sat in some meetings where there was people from, you know, pretty high up in the food chain of MSHA, and they really weren't aware of all the issues that we were bringing to the table over the tracking system, and the difference, really the differences in the mining techniques. They are now, and they are granting us some, I mean, a very little amount of leeway with this now. We're going to see where it brings us in the near future.
Now, we've been talking about the MSHA, MSHA. What is that?
MSHA stands for the Mine Safety and Health Administration. And they're in charge of enforcing the safety laws and regulations in the coal mining industry and the metal and non-metal mining industry.
That's a federal level, national level organization?
Correct, yep.
Okay. Okay. So, one of the comments I saw at some point on the forums was the idea that a lot of these independent underground anthracite mines, they're relatively short. One of the terms on these, and I don't know if that's true, let's just start there. How long are these mines typically?
Do you mean, okay, I understand what you mean already. In the mine, your typical anthracite mine, your active working section, the section that you're actively mining in,
right,
is on average, figure 200 feet. Now, the Miner Act requires these tracking systems to track you within 200 feet of your current location. Now, just stop and think about that for a minute. They're supposed to tell you within 200 feet of where your location is. Your heistman on the surface, or even just by looking at the map, the inspector, the mine rescue team, whoever, is going to know where you're at anyway, because you're going to be in the active working section of the mine.
Are these mines just I mean, we already talked about how they kind of twist and turn, and there's a pretty steep grade on them. But are they just one tunnel, or do they branch off? I mean, is there a situation where in an emergency, miners might go into it in, like, adjacent tunnels or otherwise get separated so that a system like this might still be useful?
For the most, with one notable exception, which is UAE Harmony, they're pretty big, and they're comparable to your average bituminous mine. Most of our mines are in one vein of coal, and there's really no other place to go except out your escapeway or back to your slope.
Okay, so when we were talking earlier about, you know, an anthracite underground mine needing a whole bunch more antennas and everything, that's necessary in order to get the signal from, you know, deep in the vein and deep in the tunnel out to, you know, the above ground world. But in terms of actually tracking the active section of the mine, you're saying it's all within 200 feet anyway, so there really isn't a whole lot of point to the system for these kind of mines?
That's correct. Yep.
I'm assuming this idea has been presented to the MSHA. Are they going to be willing to grant exceptions based on this or based on cost or any of these other points that we've been discussing?
As of now, they're not really going to grant exception to the rules on cost. They're not going to do it, because of the explosives. There's something in the works with it now, which I'm not going to go into too great a detail with, but they might be granted some leeway on the actual installation and the system and how we install it and stuff like that.
All right. I mean, if we get into an area where you're uncomfortable talking about for competitive reasons or anything else, just let us know and we'll back off of that. I don't want to put you on the spot or anything here. Okay, so there are what, roughly, how many mines are there now? I know in 2007, I think the Energy Administration said there were 15 underground anthracite mines in Pennsylvania. How many are there today?
I think there's, at the top of my head, there's 11 active mines. There's another one that's going to come back online shortly, pending this, actually, pending the tracking requirements. So there's 12.
Okay. And I'm going off 2007 numbers because that's the latest I could find before the show. There's basic, I believe there was 224,000 tons of coal produced by the mines in 2007. Assuming that hasn't changed too awfully much, and how much do you estimate a system would cost to install at a typical mine?
It depends on what system you're going to put in and what infrastructure you already have at the mine. You're looking for your typical system, $50,000 to $100,000 for the system itself, and then another $2,000 per mine. But what the other thing they didn't take into consideration, a lot of these mines don't have electric power at them at all.
Right, everything's so you have run lines and everything, yeah.
That's correct, yes. And the ones that do have power, out of all of them, only two of them, I think, have actually, like, utility-supplied power. The rest of them are on generators. So it's that's something else they didn't take into consideration. And we brought our thoughts on this to MSHA. Their answer to us is, well, it's not MSHA's standpoint to force a mine out of business by enforcing a law. He asked the guy again, you know, if I don't have power at my mine and I can't afford to do it, you know, is MSHA going to grant me an exception? His answer again is it's not MSHA's position to put a mine out of business over regulation, but he never said they want to do it.
Useful answer. Okay, so assuming like a worst case scenario of say $100,000 to install a system and another $2,000 per miner, using those 2007 figures, I did a little bit of math, and I figured it can cost upwards of about, what was it, $17 per ton extra if the costs were going to be, you know, figured into a single seeding season or single delivery season, and you know, everything else remained the same. It'd be $17 per ton extra passed on to the consumer. Certainly, nobody wants to pay more per ton, but is that really too much to ask? I mean, are the benefits of a system small enough to say that $17 per ton extra is too much?
Well, see, it's not so much, well, it's kind of hard to answer that. It's not so much the, I'm trying to think of how I want to word this. We're really not going to benefit at all from this system, period. It's just, it's going to actually, in some cases, it's going to make the mines more hazardous, so that's why we're fighting putting it in. And as far as the $17 per ton, that's not really that, you know, an issue, but you have to remember that 220 some odd thousand tons of coal, the vast majority of that was mined by one company. So if you know, if they all raise prices $17 a ton on raw coal to recoup the cost of the tracking system, well, that one company is going to get the lion's share of that. And there's mines that only produce 6,000-7,000 tons of coal a year, and they're just never going to recoup the cost of the system.
Well, that's a good point. Depending on the distribution, I mean, the $17 per ton is based on an average of, you know, everybody's coal having the same amount of cost associated with it. And it's not, in fact, true. Like you said, if, you know, one company or a small handful of companies are producing a lion's share of the coal, they get to spread out their system costs over a much larger range of the coal versus a smaller operation. It still has to pay that relatively large upfront cost of, say, $50,000 to $100,000. But they get to spread out over a much smaller amount, so their cost per ton would have to increase significantly more, so it puts them at a competitive disadvantage compared to that larger operation.
Well, that's correct, and to put things in perspective, it really isn't that. It's only last year. It's about this time last year, as a matter of fact, we had a mine with one man working underground by himself. Now, can you tell me how's a tracking system going to benefit? A, benefit that mine, and B, how's he ever going to be able to afford it?
Brings up an interesting question. I know I read through the the guidance that MSHA provided on implementing it. And one of the things mentioned in there is that whenever there's anybody in the mine, there has to be somebody up at the top, basically being a safety manager for the mine. Is that still the case with anthracite mines today? And like for that case that you just talked about with the one miner, do they still have to have like the support crew up at the top, or are they just kind of winging it?
Well, even if it's a one-man operation, you have one man underground, you're going to have one guy on the surface anyway to run your hoist and load the coal, and the trucks come in and the like. And actually, to my knowledge, every mine operating today has one guy on the outside.
At the end of the day, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think there's going to be any mines that actually close over this, or any kind of serious effects?
It depends on what MSHA actually decides to do with this. The problem is, in itself, the Miner Act, there's no language in there really to permit a mine not, or to, you know, there's no way to allow a mine not to have it. It's my opinion, what you're going to end up seeing in the near future is they're going to do a couple demonstrations in some of these mines, and I think they're going to realize some of our issues that we have with this, and they might grant us a year or two extension to work out some of these issues. In the end, if we actually end up having to install it, I foresee well, at least two operators closing down, a couple more working for a year, couple more years till they decide, you know, what they're going to do to us next here, and then just throw in the towel and that's going to be it.
Yeah, because a lot of these mines, like you said, they're, you know, small operations. A lot of them are family operated, and, you know, they have a couple of people working them at this point. There's the big ones like UAE Harmony and others, but most of them are fairly small, right?
Yeah, yep. I mean, if you want to put them in order, biggest to smallest, the biggest is probably Harmony. As far as production, anyway, it's Harmony. Probably RS&W then next, and then after that I'm not sure what the rankings would be, but they're the two biggest operators. And just to put things in the perspective between them two, Harmony I think last year put out I think it was around 110,000 tons of coal. RS&W put out like 22,000 tons of coal, so it just shows you the spread between the biggest operator and the second biggest, you know.
Right, those two are accounting for over half the production of the state from underground mines.
Correct, and the better part of it goes to Harmony by far.
Is there anything at this relatively late stage? I mean, like you said, these are going to be coming into effect here. Was it the 15th of June, was it?
That's correct, 15th of June.
Is there anything that our listeners and the forum members can do to help out the underground miners at this point, or is it kind of an inside battle now?
The best thing to do would be write your senator and congressman and explain the situation to them. What we did get to do, we had a meeting with MSHA about 2-3 weeks ago, and it was pretty productive, and we did get them to postpone a date. I'm not quite sure when they postponed it to. We didn't set a date at that meeting, but what we're going to do is get a couple of mines with temporary systems installed so they can demonstrate to MSHA, to the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection, and to Tim Holden, our local, the congressman down there, what the issues are with the system and see what they could do about it to help us out.
So write your local representatives, maybe write that Tim Holden guy. You said he's a representative down there?
Correct.
And otherwise, just keep watching the forums and see what's coming down the pike from the on the threads that get started, because I mean, this has been one of the more active topics over the last couple of months here during the spring and summer so far, and from the sounds of it, it'll keep up for at least a little while.
Yeah, hopefully to come to a good agreement and something that everybody can work with.
Well, let's see. Been talking to Mike. Mike, what's your last name, by the way?
Oh, it's a big Lithuanian name. It's Oxstalkalnis.
Mike A, huh?
That's what everybody calls me.
All right. All right, so we've been talking to Mike A. He's been talking to us about the new Miner Act and the MSHA enforcement of the new regulations on underground anthracite mining in Pennsylvania and other places. He is a participant at the undergroundminers.com website, and also, as he said at the beginning, he is involved with the Number 9 Tour Mine. The website for that is NO9mine.com. That's NO9mine.com. And I don't know, we'll be touching a little bit more on underground mining in general, the miners, the kind of work they do, the lives they lead, and a little bit about the history of underground mining in Pennsylvania, as well as some current events. Next time, going to be next month, the first Thursday of the month, be episode 6, and hopefully we'll have another guest or two for you. So keep checking the forums, and we'll talk to you guys later. Have a good night.
You too, thanks.